Hello and welcome to Voices for Local, or main hoon Monisha Singh Katyal. My guest today is truly talented and doing some amazing work in sustainability and alternative products. She is very inspiring, and I'm in conversation with Zuzana Gomboshova, the co-founder of the brand Malai. Thank you, Zuzana. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. I'm actually very excited for this conversation.
So am I. Thank you for having me. It will be an exciting session, I'm sure.
You know, in 2012, you earned a Master's of Arts degree in Future Textiles from the University of Arts, London. You focused a lot on biodegradable materials in your research. What was the journey like from there on to meeting your co-founder? How did you come to saying, I want to start a brand like Malai?
Well, it's quite a long journey, actually. I earned my degree in 2014, and I took a course called Material Futures, which was running at Central St. Martin's College of Arts and Design in London. And prior to that, I worked as a apparel and textile designer in Turkey and different countries. And I was really keen to explore the sustainability aspect of the industry because I really loved my job, but I just felt like the value is not distributed equally throughout the whole system. And there's so much that escapes to the final consumer that actually goes into the process. And that was, as you mentioned, also the first time I encounter biomaterials as such. And
right.
The initial stages were very confusing. You know, working with biomaterials is quite different from working with conventional materials. You know, as a apparel designer, let's say I would take a fabric, you know, which would be woven for me, and I could shape it and cut it and make a garment or anything else out of it. With biomaterials, I really had to kind of dig through my knowledge of the materia itself straight from the beginning, because very often you end up with, you know, some kind of gloop of something.
Right.
And you're like, okay, so this is what I've been working for past 3 months or so. You have to fight with challenges such as microorganisms attacking your materials. So the stability has to be considered. You know, you're working with different tools. So I almost unlearned what I learned previously, and I had to learn and rebuild my foundation of knowledge and dig deep into fields of chemistry and microbiology, etc., in order to gain new knowledge, actually, for my current practice.
Right.
And this is where I came across bacterial cellulose. So bacterial cellulose, it's an exciting biomaterial that is grown. And my entire diploma project was based on exploring potential of this particular material.
Right.
And during that research, I came across the fact that bacterial cellulose actually originates from Philippines, where mm-hmm. it's known as nata de coco, and it's grown on water from mature coconuts over there for
right.
purpose of food industry. And so a couple of years later, I came to Mumbai, to India. I was invited to work on a different project. And in the back of my mind, I had this idea, India is full of coconuts. Perhaps someone is growing bacterial cellulose over here and I could continue my research, because back at home, it was a little difficult. You would have to always create good growing conditions for the bacteria, adjust the temperature, humidity, etc. So over here, you have ideal conditions and you don't need to change a whole lot in order to grow this material.
Right.
So these were the beginnings. You know, from there on, I met our co-founder, Susmit, in 2015. And I remember the conversation was really funny. I was telling him about my research and that it can be grown on water from coconuts. And I remember he asked me, do you know where is Kerala? I was like, no, I have no idea. He's like, what? That's where you find all the coconuts.
Coconuts,
that's
correct.
The hub. Right. And he was frankly quite surprised himself that he has never heard about this material coming from a very coconut conscious culture.
Right.
So it grabbed his attention at that point. And we are both very eager makers and designers. So we had shared interest in exploring new materials and making together. So these were our very humble beginnings.
Right. But, you know, briefly take my listeners through the entire production process of the material, because most of us don't even know what it is and what it takes to create these things.
Right, of course. So you have to bear in mind, nothing about this material is industrially produced.
Exactly.
Not yet, at least. It's actually quite, to a large extent, it's handmade material, which is kind of interesting category on its own.
Absolutely.
Because people don't always have that notion and they don't perceive materials as such, but actually, yes, some materials are made in this way. And everything starts at the coconut processing unit, where the coconuts are broken in order to harvest the white inside, the flesh of coconuts. And so once this is done, the water is discarded, and usually it's being drained in somewhere around the factory. We collect this water, we filter it, we sterilize it, and add a couple of other nutrients that need to be there for the bacteria. And we distribute everything in kind of trays, where we add the mother culture, which contains the bacterial culture.
Yes.
Everything has to happen in sterilized, you know, clean environment, of course. And we let the bacteria do its job. It takes 12 to 14 days. Over the time, you'll see that the bacteria consumes this liquid and turns it into kind of a jelly-like mat or substance.
Okay.
And this is the bacterial cellulose that is our primary raw material.
Right.
We enrich this mat with a blend of natural fibers. So these fibers come from plants all over India. We narrow down our selection to banana stem fibers, hemp fibers, and sisal fibers.
Okay.
So all these three types of fibers are cooked in order to remove the impurities and in order to soften the material, and they are added to bacterial cellulose. So we create kind of a mat of a material, which is then dewatered and dried. After drying, we have several softening processes. We press the material to even out the surface, and we coat it with different kinds of natural gums, natural starches, and natural oils to get the right properties. If desired, we can also imprint a special texture into the material. If not, it has its own kind of texture or a grain, we call it grain, which comes from the mechanical process of graining the material. So the whole process takes around 4 to 5 weeks.
Okay.
This, of course, doesn't have to be this way. It's mostly due to the fact that we are with our production at a certain stage of mechanization, and it takes us this much to complete the whole process.
But tell me, how many coconut farmers and processing units are you working with currently? And what are some of the challenges that you faced in reaching out and building these relationships?
We actually work only with a handful of coconut processing units. I'd love to work with more, and people do reach out, to be honest. But very often they don't realize that this is something that also requires funding from their end, you know, that we are ourselves developing a new material, which is just gaining traction within the market. And It will probably take some time until this can be something like truly profitable for the supply chain as well. You know, lots of people think that there's already like a, you know, mass produced, well-established production, which is not yet the case. In terms of challenges, well, first of all, you know, everybody knows coconuts here, but nobody knows nata de coco. So it takes a while till you even explain to people what it is and why can it be or should it be produced. And usually people are quite intrigued when they hear the magic phrase, you know, you can turn coconut water into solid material. But of course, challenges are maintaining the quality of the material. Very often it happens that coconut water can get contaminated at the beginning, and that spoils your entire batch production. Very often, you know, we get different quality of bacterial cellulose, which is harvested, and that naturally influences the quality of our material. So there are these factors that come in mind.
Right. So what are the different kinds of products Malai makes with the coconut-based materials that you're talking about? And how do you keep re-innovating your designs?
Right. So our primary product is actually sheet of material.
Yes.
This is what we focus on primarily, and this is what we then supply to other manufacturers, brands, and designers. But we also run a small line of accessories brand under our own production, which is called Malai Studio.
Right.
And as such, we produce any kinds of accessories, fashion accessories, purses, bags, backpacks, etc. But very often we also do prototyping services and product development services for people whom we supply the materials to, because to be honest, it's a new material and it does have its unique characteristics and technology for converting it into the product. So we also do that. In terms of what has ever been made of Malai, many things. We have done all sorts of fashion accessories, watch straps, cushion covers, footwear, etc. It's a lot of creative sweat, to be honest. It's a constant, observation, and we constantly ask for feedback from everyone whom we ever supplied material to, whom we ever sold a piece of product. And it's, to be honest, very challenging to get good quality feedback from people
Right.
because we are all having busy lives. So very few of the people actually understand
Actually
that
give
it's
you
crucial
back
for
good
us.
feedback. But you work with brands in the UK, Germany, the Czech Republic, among others, supplying them with Malai materials and products. But you've also showcased your brand at various fashion events globally. How do you approach these international players, and what is their reaction to a local brand from India?
Very often we are actually getting approached by them. I have to say, because I run on so many fronts of the company, I don't get much time to actually do some kind of promo or marketing as such. But because we are in a kind of advantageous position at this point, we get approached by a lot of people interested in what we do because of its innovative aspect, because it's something different and something sustainable. So usually we get approached by different platforms, exhibitions, etc.
How is the Indian market for sustainable alternative products like yours as compared to the European and the Western world?
Right, so it's important to understand the markets are very different and at different stage of development, although they do feed into each other quite a lot. Over here, in terms of awareness, the sustainable materials or sustainable fashion market is kind of in its inception, and you can see a couple of, smaller brands kind of tapping into the area and doing the education part as well for most of it. And then India is a hub for manufacturing, so a lot of brands from all around the world would get their stuff made here in India. And this is when sustainability also comes into the picture because the clients from abroad very often ask their manufacturer to maintain certain circularity standards or to source sustainable materials, etc. Whereas, the market in Western Europe or US, marketing for sustainability and sustainable fashion has been there for a little longer. There is a little more infrastructure existing for these type of products and materials. People's awareness is usually a little larger, but also we have to understand that very often there is also very different disposable income, whereas for someone living in Switzerland, buying something which is sustainable might not come at a huge cost. For someone in India from middle class income, it might be a huge investment. So these are usually aspects that come into the picture.
So on that note, if I was to ask you to name one homegrown brand that you would like to nominate to be a part of Voices for Local, which brand would that be?
Oh, okay. I think I would like to nominate Mölnlycke Eco. They are doing such a wonderful job with our materials, of course. I really love their understanding of circularity and their work and understanding of material. Very often we see people trying to force the material into being something that maybe is not. And it's very nice to see that people actually get time and effort to understand its advantages, its limitations, you know, find their approach to working with material. And I think they've done a wonderful job at that. But there's so many brands I would love to nominate if you can run like a group session, of course.
So on that note, thank you so much for choosing to be a part of the show. And I really wish Malai goes places to places because what you guys are doing is absolutely commendable. So thank you, Susanna.
Thank you very much. I hope we'll go some places at least as well. The times have been tough for, you know, every small businesses, including us, but
Yes.
we do continue working and we hope.
I think things are turning around, and I think, you know, people need time to accept a certain kind of product, a certain kind of material. And like you said, it's a question of pricing as well. So there are multiple issues, but I think the awareness levels are going higher and higher. And our aim, at least at Voices for Local, is at least to create that kind of awareness to say, go for handmade, go for local, go for sustainable, because I think it's also the need of the hour more than anything
Of
else from
course.
a larger perspective. Thank you for choosing to be a part of the show, Susanna, and wishing you all the best. To all my listeners, write in to me with your suggestions, names of brands that you would like to see get featured, and connect with me on my Instagram at Monisha Singh Katyal. And please do follow at Voices for Local on Instagram to know more about your favorite local brands. Until next time, check out Malai online. You can go on their website, malai.eco, and happy shopping!